Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I welcome Charlotte Howard, the New York Bureau Chief and Energy Editor for The Economist magazine, observing natural gas, that fossil fuel that's dominant right now across America. Certainly, it's part of the story of fracking. It is also driving more and more of the industry and big dreams that natural gas is a preferred fossil fuel. Following the remarks of the Biden administration, the confabs, the dreaming, the question of climate, is natural gas long-term the solution? Charlotte, a very good evening to you. I will not answer that question. I will ask right now, you have statistics that say that the majors, the big fossil fuel companies, used to be called oil companies, are either hesitating or seeing a slowing growth for natural gas demand. Is that worldwide, or is that particular to nations that are sensitive to climate change? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. The super majors, as people like to refer to them, so these are the companies that are household names, ExxonMobil, Chevron, BP, Royal Dutch Shell, Total. Over time, they've placed growing bets on gas, in large part because they see gas as being more resilient in the transition to cleaner energy than oil. So you've seen gas rise as a share of their sales. And for some, that really is going to accelerate in the coming decade, where Shell, for instance, says that oil will decline as a share of sales, same for Total, but gas is going to be growing. And the reason why they historically have been enthusiastic about gas is because it has fewer emissions than, say, a coal-fired power plant. Power plant that runs on gas is much cleaner than one that runs on coal. But now you see a shifting debate where you have world leaders, not just Joe Biden, but European prime ministers and presidents, Xi Jinping in China, talking about net zero goals around mid-century. And the question is whether gas is compatible with that net zero vision. And so that affects how risky these gas bets look.
Is this independent of your reporting on write-downs by the super majors for their natural gas purchases of these last decades? Is that a separate category, or is that an anticipation of the debate ahead?
Well, what you saw in the past year were some really big write-downs from gas. You're correct that there were some big write-downs taken by ExxonMobil, by Shell, by Chevron, because there was a lot of enthusiasm for gas that was part of kind of a trend of broader overspending about a decade ago from some of these huge companies. But companies now say, you know, we've learned our lesson and the gas investments that we're making now are going to be much more resilient. And the question is whether that will prove true.
Two questions in the article in The Economist magazine, two questions to be answered. The first and second run together, but I'll isolate them. How quickly, how fast, how comprehensive will the regulations be about fossil fuel emissions? That is unanswered at this point, as I understand. Is it anticipated that that will be answered across borders, across continents, a global standard?
A global standard, that seems unlikely because each country is going to decarbonize at a different pace depending on local politics and their own energy mix. Countries that are particularly dependent on coal, for instance, might switch to gas, whereas in the United States or Europe, where total energy demand is actually pretty flat, you can have renewables eat up a much greater share of gas demand, particularly in the power sector. So there's going to be some variation. But one of the things that makes it so hard for big companies to make these investments is that it's just not clear how aggressive governments will be to limit emissions. So they're making a lot of noise around wanting to set these net zero goals by mid-century. But what does that mean in the interim? Will Biden's plan to decarbonize America get through Congress in the form of this infrastructure bill? Is that infrastructure bill enough? And so there are some big unanswered questions on policy. And that makes it pretty tricky when you're a company that's essentially deciding whether to make a 40-year investment in a new LNG terminal. A lot is going to change over 40 years. So the question is, how resilient will those 40-year investments be in an environment of rapidly changing policy?
There's this trenchant comment in your article that galvanizes everything. Gas is over. Is that a T-shirt, Charlotte? Is that what we're looking at? How far-reaching is gas is over?
I don't think there anyone who would credibly say on a global scale gas is over. But the question is whether you have enough uses of gas, enough people in different parts of the world saying gas is over, that it makes a meaningful dent in total gas demand. So, for instance, in the Northeast, where you and I are both based, in my understanding, there's been a lot of opposition to building new gas pipelines up to the Northeast. And instead, people want to get more energy, for instance, from offshore wind. Policymakers want to get more energy from offshore wind. In Europe, there's a lot of resistance to gas and a desire to really ramp up both renewables and then build a hydrogen economy to try to provide an alternative energy source. So you do see these pockets of opposition, and the question is whether that adds up to something really meaningful for the gas business.
The second question in the Economist presentation is about rival technologies, how quickly they will advance, because we've all read about physical limits of renewables right now, the technology needed to increase their percentage contribution to the electric grid, for example. However, there's also this thing that seems like magical thinking, but it's there, carbon capture. Is that one of the technologies that is an unknown, whether carbon capture can be sophisticated enough to provide for natural gas plants?
Yes, I think there are two big unknowns for gas and really the energy sector broadly. So as you say, one is policy and the other is technology and rival technologies for fossil fuels. So you could have natural gas with carbon capture and sequestration. So capturing the emissions from a natural gas-fired power plant or a big factory and then burying those emissions underground. And that could presumably be a carbon neutral activity. The question is whether it will be deployed on a big enough scale and at a lower enough cost to compete against some other technologies that could power that power plant or could power a given factory with no emissions at all.
Liquid natural gas, LNG for short. Several years ago, I was in Qatar, and that was all the rage. India, the subcontinent, could take all the LNG that Qatar's fields could produce. We know that there are plans or have been plans for liquid natural gas export out of the United States. Is that a separate category, LNG, than the natural gas pipelines?
Well, there are lots of different categories of natural gas investments. So you could invest in the upstream fields that are producing natural gas, in the pipelines to transport natural gas, in natural gas-fired power plants, or in these huge LNG terminals, which bring natural gas from one part of the world, and then you load it onto a ship in the form of LNG, and you bring it somewhere else. LNG, there's been a huge surge in American LNG since the dawn of the shale boom, and you've had a lot of activity along America's Gulf Coast with the construction of these giant new liquefaction facilities. The question for LNG long term is, you know, really how much new LNG needs to come online to meet demand. And it's hard to answer that question when you don't know exactly how much demand will be, how quickly demand for LNG will grow. And Qatar, you know, it's good that you mentioned them, because they recently announced an enormous new investment in a project that people had anticipated, but it had been delayed. And that will increase Qatar's production by more than a quarter. And so when you're thinking about the competitiveness of the natural gas landscape, you have to think not just about the companies that have giant, that are giant and traded on public markets like ExxonMobil or Shell, but also about these state-backed actors, which have a real incentive to monetize their resources while they can before the energy transition gets too far ahead. And frankly, their costs are very low, whether you're talking about LNG from Qatar or piped gas from Russia. Russia has pipelines that support Europe, and then also has recently built new pipelines to China to meet Chinese demand. They're investing in LNG. So it's a very, very competitive landscape. And the question is, who gets to play in this increasingly competitive natural gas space, and which investments will survive?
Charlotte Howard is the New York bureau chief for The Economist magazine, as well as the energy editor, looking at natural gas, the bright student in the room who is now being questioned about his or her future. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.